Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Fire Engineering Radio and to our show, Pride and Ownership, the Love for the Job. I'm your host, Chief Rick Lasky, and this show idea was brought about by Chief Bobby Hall, the editor-in-chief of Fire Engineering Magazine. And Bobby and I have talked about this for a long time, and as a matter of fact, we were just visiting the other day, and I kind of called him all excited about where things are going with Pride and Ownership and just with the fire service. And I was explaining to him that it seems like not a day goes by that I don't get two or three or four or five emails from firefighters and officers, again, all over North America that are, we tried the wetting down of our new engine, and it was awesome. I thought it was going to be corny, but it's great. And we did a swearing in, and we did a graduation, and can I get a copy of your policies on uniforms? And those are all those that just get you fired up. But to be honest, some of the emails that you get that do just as much to stoke you is some of those where you get them from different folks in the fire service that and this happened after the Pride and Ownership webcast we did a while back, was, what do I do, Rick, with, I've got a firefighter who just doesn't seem to get it, or I've got a company officer that I work for that just is not there for us, and or I've got a chief that doesn't seem to get it. And the first thing I tell everybody is, I don't care where you're at, I don't care what part of the country, I don't care what fire department you work for, everyone's going through the same stuff. And if they haven't, they're about to. Maybe they're 3 years behind where you're at, or maybe they're 3 years ahead. Maybe they've already went through what you're already going through right now. It's just this learning curve that constantly occurs in the fire service. And that's kind of the neat thing about going to these conferences, especially FDIC. When you put 27,000 firefighters and vendors and just folks together for a week, I love sending my guys up there. My firefighters go up there and they come back and they say, they're having the same issues we are in the firehouse, or it's not that much different. We're all kind of alike. I was talking to a guy from California. I was talking to a guy from Florida. It doesn't matter what state in the union or from what part of Canada you're in, it's the same stuff. And there's so much to learn and gain out there from what other people have went through. So it's not something new when it hits you or your department or your situation. But Bobby's big concern was, how do we get the word out even more than what we're doing with the magazine and maybe with the website and the book? How do we get out to and reach out to more people when it comes to Pride and Ownership and the love for the job? This day is kind of a, happy sad day, if you will. It's an exciting day because we're starting this, the first of many programs regarding this topic, Pride and Ownership, to come in the future. Sadly enough, it's also, at the time of this recording, is December 6th, and that's the anniversary of the death of our good friend, Lieutenant Joe Samick, who was killed in line of duty December 6, 1989, in a house fire. But it's also a good time to celebrate what he did for us and his contributions and what he meant to the fire service. And, he's still with us. He's with us every day, just like all of our brothers and sisters that have gone before us are still with us, if you let them. In the future here, we're going to hit on a whole bunch for you. We're going to have some great guests on. I'm reaching out to Glenn Corbett, the Professor Glenn. This is, and I've embarrassed him before, he's the smartest firefighter on the face of the earth, man. When it comes to, I don't care what it is, and especially history and traditions, and anyone that's been in a room with us when we talk about, the history of the fire service or the traditions related to the fire service, we get on a roll, and I learn something from that guy every time I see him. He's just so special, and he's a gem. He's a, as John Salka would refer to, he's a prince. And when John says it about someone, that's the tops. You can't get higher than that. And there's some other folks we're going to reach out to as the months and hopefully even further than that go on. We want to talk to some of those that are out there doing some different things and making things happen. A lot of people, and to be honest, a lot of firefighters keep coming up to me and ask, how did this whole Pride and Ownership thing get started? And I just want to share with those of you that have never heard how we got to this point, because it's been a little while now, and that's one of the things we're going to talk about today, is how did we get going with Pride and Ownership? And actually, it started a long time ago. I know for me, for Rick Lasky, it started, you know, back when I was in Illinois and teaching, and you know, we were doing so many just outstanding classes. I worked for two great bosses at the time, Jerry Monagold and Jim Straseski, for the director, assistant director of the University of Illinois Fire Service Institute. And man, if you had a program you wanted to get out to the fire service, they were all over it. And you know, we had lost some good friends in the line of duty, and felt that we were kind of missing something. We, you know, that institute does more training than pretty much any other fire academy that I'm aware of in the country, with programs and certifications, and they've got some incredible field staff instructors and paid staff. Just an incredible opportunity and an instrument that at times, I know when I was in Illinois, kind of was taken for granted. When you leave somewhere and you go to maybe another state where they absolutely don't have any kind of organized training like that, unless they do it with a department or a county association, you forget how good you have it where you came from. But they were teaching every kind of program you could think of and every certification. I mean, whether it's firefighter 2 or 3, fire apparatus engineer, you know, that first grade company officer, that fire officer 1 program, which was 5 40-hour classes at the time. Fire officer 2 at that time was 5, and then they went down to 4 40-hour classes. Fire officer 3, very, very good program for chief officers. And then you had all the rescue certifications, the arson certifications, every hazmat certification you can think of, public education, fire prevention, you know, the list goes on and on and on. Aside from all the specialty classes they were teaching, the officer development classes and tender and tanker operations, depending on where you come from, you know, just hitting everything they could. But back then, what we realized we weren't doing is we weren't spending enough time, you know, teaching our firefighters how to save themselves or save a crew. I was very fortunate to have taught there with some absolutely incredible instructors, and we still are with them today teaching. Whether it's Greg Fisher, if you're at FDIC and you go through the live burn, the 1403 class, that actually shows you how to conduct live fire training properly without getting people hurt. Greg's the one that taught me. Greg's very strict. First of all, he's a fire service brother and loves you. But when it's time to go to work, he puts his game face on and teaches an incredible program of how to conduct that training again properly. You know, Ray Hoff, there was just so many different instructors there, that Jack McCaslin, Eddie Enright, Johnny Hojack, Bob McKee, I mean, Mike Arriga, there are so many different guys that Tommy, I mean, they just did so many great things for the fire service and continue to do so. When I proposed an idea to Jim Straseski to teach the annual fire college, that was an excellent opportunity to try out a new program sometimes. And we talked about a program that actually Sal Marchese, one of our instructors, a lieutenant from the FDNY at the time, a good guy and good brother, about coming up with a program that teaches firefighters just that, how to save one of their own. So we put together a program called Saving Your Own, and actually the first class, I was never so happy in my life when Mr. Straseski turned to me and said, okay, you asked for these instructors, this is who you've got. He wrote them on the board, and it was, you know, Battalion Chief Ray Hoff, it was, you know, Chief John Norman, Chief Don Hade, and Lieutenant Sal Marchese. And we had set out with 36 students as an enrollment cap for a first 12-hour program, and then another 36 for another 12-hour program. I think we had 400 and 500 sign up for the first class and more for the second class. So immediately we knew we were onto something and built that program into something pretty special, which has done a lot of great things for the fire service. And I remember the first year we taught it nationally, you know, we had 7 documented saves. People called and said, you know, I was able to save my partner and myself due to what was taught by your instructors at that class. And we had a cadre of instructors that were incredible at teaching that program. And you would think that, you know, understanding that truly, on an average, 100 or so firefighters are lost in the line of duty every year, that now we finally are onto something that's gonna make those numbers go down. Finally, something's going to we're gonna hit 7. Even if we went from 100 to 98, that's 2 firefighters that are alive today. The program you're teaching, it's an incredible feeling to know that you might have an opportunity to really make a dent in things and have an impact. And the year would go by, and the numbers wouldn't go down, and another year, and you started doubting yourself. Maybe we're not delivering it exactly how we should, or are we adding more firefighters to the fire service, or what's going on? And, as great a group as they are with the FDIC Advisory Board, a group of folks that put that conference together, one of the ideas that came out of that group originally was we were sitting around in one of our meetings was, you know, what's the theme going to be this year? Ronnie Kannerman used to MC him, and Ronnie would ask, all right, what's the theme going to be? He headed up for Billy and them, and we came up with, maybe we need to get back to the basics. Let's get back to the basics. So the theme was back to the basics, and that year one of the featured speakers was Commissioner Leo Stapleton, an absolute fire service god. I mean, the man's incredible. If you've ever met him, he's just, he's just unbelievable. What an incredible person. What an incredible man. And just, I'm just proud to have known him. And he's still doing great things for us. But he was giving his speech, and he said, you know, this year's theme is back to the basics. He says, why do we get away from it in the first place? We're not that good. And he was right. I mean, we're not that good where we can give up on the basics of firefighting. It's throwing ladders and stretching hose and air packs and forcible entry and ventilation and all those things we talk about all the time. Because it's not, you know, what we realize with the fatalities, nobody's throwing a bomb through the window and killing firefighters or knocking a building down on top of them. We're losing them due to all the small things. We're losing them because we didn't get water, or we stretched the wrong hand line, or we didn't train our people properly with their air pack. There's all these things. So I thought maybe if we got back to the basics, we would make a difference. And now the numbers kind of stayed the same. So another good brother of mine, Skip Coleman, assistant chief in Toledo, Ohio, who's got, not just a bunch of programs. He's got some great programs out there besides some great books. You know, I happen to be teaching a program in Toledo, and Skip and I got on our soapbox about, how we're not training our firefighters to do this and that, and I got going about how we're not teaching them to manage the Mayday. And, we're not, when the Mayday's out, we're not teaching our officers, our incident commanders, and not even teaching the firefighters how to react to the Mayday, how to do that. We're doing it tabletop-wise, but we're truly not really reaching out and showing them what's going to happen. And often, how well we manage the Mayday either leads to the success or failure of that line of duty death. And, all right, well, Skip says, hey, Ricky, how about let's do an article together. I'll do the incident command side, and you do the RIT side. And we did, and we put it out there in January of 2000, and it actually was nominated for a Neil Journalism Award, which we were very proud of that it had that much of an impact. But there we were again, teaching the program, article out there, and the numbers still weren't going down. Well, as we travel around and we meet different firefighters, my best buddy in the whole world, Battalion Chief John Salka from the FDNY, we'll go into town, we'll go to teach somewhere, and maybe that Friday night we'll be out to have dinner, supper, if you're from where I grew up, with the men and women of the department, ask them what's going on and ask them how things are going and, what's new right here, and I swear to you, one of them will say, well, Chief, we just finished our negotiating our contract, and we did this, and I'll ask them, how'd you do? And they say, well, we got, 2-2 and 3 and this and that, and, in some places that's an incredible raise, especially, when we're suffering through some economic times a while back. And I'll say, okay, what'd you have to give up to get that? And they'll talk about it. And I say, well, what were some of the big ticket issues? And I swear to you, they'll say, well, we get to go shopping for the meal on duty again. And a lot of you that I know out there, we've talked about this before, and I'm still amazed till this day that my question was, let me get this straight. You're not allowed to go to the grocery store to shop for the meal that you're gonna prepare today for the troops. And they'll come back and say, well, Chief doesn't think it's good PR. And my first thought is, and my question is, what, are you going there naked? I mean, come on. I mean, are you doing something wrong? Are you parking in a fire lane, leading, displaying a bad example? I mean, that's 365 times you're out there in the public, and what an incredible opportunity to get out there and get out of the firehouse. And I said, if you got those rules, you got to have the rules like we had here in Louisville, like, you can't turn a TV on from 7 o'clock in the morning till 5 p.m. And the guys here is a great group of folks. They really like that country video show CMT, but in order to hear the music but not watch the TV, they had to put a towel over the tube or turn the brightness down. And My question to him was, fellas, my pride and joy, my baby girl Emily's at home right now, and my daughter, and you could run on her and stick a needle in her arm and make drug calculations in a nanosecond, but I can't trust you what time to turn the TV off and on during the day. I think we got our priorities out of whack here. And I said, I know if you got that rule, you can't stand in front of firehouse. It's like that magic wall is there. You can't go beyond the pillars, and they'll think we're lazy. And I put park benches back in front of the firehouses here my first week here, and I got blasted by someone who said I bombed us back to the Stone Age. People are going to think we're lazy, and I'm like, no, we're not. People want a firehouse down at the end of the block. They want a real firehouse with real firefighters that they grew up watching on TV, reading about in books. They don't want, some Fortune 500 company all locked up, doors shut, windows, everything else. I mean, in most places you can do that. They want to know that they've got firefighters in the block that are going to come and help them when their bad time happens. So it was just kind of amazing to see that we had what we often refer to, and I don't like the word stupid, but it's the only one I can come up with for this, those stupid rules. So, the first night would be with the firefighters, and then the next night, on the way back from supper, the chief of department would say, hey, can I give you guys a ride back to the hotel? And on the way back, sure as we're talking shop. That's what John and I usually do. We're talking fire service, man. I've told people before, I've got a bumper sticker that my wife and I get out to folks called, I'd rather be pulling ceiling. Everybody's got them license plate brackets. I'd rather be golfing, or I'd be fishing, or I'd be flying. Well, you know what? Grand scheme of things, I'd rather be pulling ceiling. I'd rather be in a room pulling ceiling with my buddies, chasing fire, doing my job. That's what I love. And we're on our way back to the hotel, and halfway through it, you can kind of tell the chief's not listening to us, and then he just interrupts and says, look, can I run something by you guys? Can I ask your advice or opinion on something? And we kind of look at each other because we know what's coming, because it kind of happens all over. And his first question will be, he goes, what do I got to do to boost morale around here? I mean, I'm trying to do this, I'm trying to do that, and the guys keep staying on me and so on. And I'll say, well, if you're really asking for an honest answer, boss, you know them rules you got? They're about the shopping and the TV, they're stupid. And he goes, but I said, no, they really are. I mean, we've got so much more on the importance scale to be worried about than what time the TV's on and off. And if I can't trust my guys to do their job, then I'm either hiring the wrong people or we've got everything screwed up in life. I mean, there are so many things we need to be worrying about protecting our firefighters, our communities, training, apparatus, tools. If you're all worked up and you've got those silly rules, then, there's all kinds of problems. I mean, I'm sorry, but there's all kinds of issues. And I'll get some chiefs that'll get a little hostile with me and say, well, you don't understand and all this. And I do understand. And a lot of us do. And I'm thinking, if we want to get back to how things used to be or should be, as I tell people, not as much as it used to be, how about where it should be? Then we got to be grown-ups. We got to be professionals, and we got to be adults. We got to be professional men and women that are just doing this job and making a difference and not worrying about. I mean, if you've got to look, if your nose is in your rule book every day, then you've got some serious issues. That should probably be the last thing you have to look at. You know what I'm saying? I mean, just get to a point where you're doing good stuff. And John and I would get back at a hotel and we'd sit up and talk and. Kind of amazed that no matter where we went, we kind of bumped into some folks like that. And at the time, there was a time when we were trying to solicit classes for FDIC where you besides Chief Brunicini and Chief Compton and a couple other folks, very few people were teaching anything on the leadership line. Now there's everybody and their mother doing it, which I guess is good. But we came up with a program called Real Leadership with Real People, because that's what we're talking about, real leadership with real people. Let's talk about the real thing, not some program that worked for, some corporate community out there 25 years ago. Let's talk about something, and let's teach to our folks, how to take care of business in a firehouse, how to deal with, the recruitment and retention crisis facing the National Volunteer Fire Services and training within the volunteer fire departments and all the issues along those lines, and with the combination departments, the pay departments. Let's talk about the real stuff. And that's kind of what we got to. And that program kind of just to its own world, if you will. Well, We thought that, if we started making a difference there, maybe we'd make a difference in some other areas of the firehouse. And what we realized is, we were frustrated when Saving Our Own, or when John Salka created Get Out Alive. When Saving Our Own, Get Out Alive didn't seem to be having as great an impact as we thought it was, and the Back to the Basics didn't work, and the Managing the Mayday, I mean, it was working, but not like we thought it was. What we realized was we were killing firefighters before we ever left the firehouse. We're losing firefighters due to our lack of leadership or poor leadership right back in the firehouse. My good buddy, Chief Donnie Haight from the FDNY, has said for years, if there are a bunch of mutts in the firehouse, there are a bunch of mutts in the fire run. There's no metamorphosis occur. You don't go out there and they unzip their costume and they become super firefighter. That poor attitude, that crappy attitude, carries right out from the firehouse onto the fire ground. Don't let anybody fool you. People can put on shows, but you will see the real thing when you get out there. And we thought, here we go. Well, let's really talk about the issues that are going on in the firehouses and so on. And then what we realized was, we're missing one more thing. Through all that, I kind of, if you know me, I can get on a soapbox once in a while about a couple of things. But one was about, let's talk leadership. Let's talk firefighter survival training. Let's talk basics. Let's talk all that. It comes down to a lack of pride and ownership. It comes down to we're getting to a point where there's a lack of love for the job. We've got people that just, we've lost the journeymen. We've lost the people that have sat down with these rookie firefighters and explained to them what it's all about. And we need to grab a hold of that, because if we don't, we're going to lose everything. And I've said it many, many times before, if we don't grab a hold of this thing sooner or later, you might as well throw the uniforms out and put a little name tag on your shirt that says, "Hi, my name's Chip," and just move on down the road. That's why we've got to reach back and grab a hold of the ownership when it comes to the fire service. It was kind of funny because I talk about the Real Leadership with Real People program, which John and I have done the 8-hour version at FDIC every year for a while, and this coming year it's going to be our last time doing for right now. That version, the following year, we're actually going to do part two for Diane and Bobby in the way of all the things we've never been able to talk about because I don't have time from all these classes. We're going to do part two and cover a whole new area, if you will, how to organize your day as a chief or company officer and performance evaluations and company training, all the things we never got to. But, realizing that was going on, that program, again, I tell people, was born out of frustration, if you will, with some of the leaders that we have out there. The Pride and Ownership program happened on accident. And again, for those of you that have never heard the story, it was, if I can hit that one more time with you, so we start off on the right foot. Peter Hodge, who was running FDIC at the time, now Diane Feldman's really doing a great job with things. She's an incredible person and lady, and I love her. And Bobby Halton, our editor-in-chief now, again, two people doing great work with their staff, and there's so many people that do a wonderful job. But at the time, Peter had called me and said, "Hey, Bill Manning was our editor at the time. Billy would like you to do the opening keynote at Indy this year." And I said, "Well, if Bill wants that, I'm a good soldier, whatever you want. And what do you want me to talk about?" He said, "About that, I want you to talk about that thing you do." I said, "What thing?" He goes, "You know that thing you do." I said, "Peter, what thing are you talking about?" He goes, "When you get on your soapbox and you go off about chiefs that don't care about their departments and company officers that don't, give a damn about their guys and firefighters that bitch about the job all the time." And I said, "Peter, I don't think they want to hear a chubby little Polack Italian, from Chicago stand up there and bellyache." And he said, "No, I think they do." He says, "The hook is you got to put it in writing, because we've got, people there and you got to give it to the teleprompter lady, tell Linda, and work out from there. And I know most of what you do is from the heart or off the cuff." And I said, "Okay." So, I did what I had to do in writing. I gave it to tell Linda that day, and Billy introduced me, and Ronnie Canterman was out there. And I walked out, and I read the first three lines and walked away from the podium. And I thank God that they filmed it, because I got to see what I actually said afterwards. But I think we hit a good chord with a lot of folks, because a lot of people really ended up stoked by it. And it's kind of weird to talk about a program that you did that way, because I'm the least pompous person I know. I make fun of myself all the time. I think there's a lot of people out there that take themselves way too seriously. one of my favorite sayings is egos eat brains. When you let your ego run amok, you're done. So I think you got to constantly work to keep that in check. And again, you know, I think the best way is just kind of poke fun at yourself once in a while. But I think we really hit our mark with a lot of folks. And people ask me about, well, what does pride and ownership do? And I'll say, you know, it's all the things we stand up and scream about. And it's all the things we stand up and scream about. It's the stuff that gets us frustrated, and it's the stuff that excites us about the job, all wrapped into one. And there's something for everybody in there. It's not just about the traditions and the ceremonies. It's about how we act, how we do our job, how we mentor, how we train, how we market our mission, everything, and how we take care of all this stuff, wrapped all into to one big, huge, gigantic program, if you will, or whatever. And this thing keeps growing every day. There was a big request for the copies of the speech, and Jerry Nalis and Mary and Julie at the Penwell side of things, at the publishing side, decided finally, hey, how about we do a DVD from the speech? And they did it, and what we agreed upon with the royalties is that whatever we make on it will go to the Ray Downey, Chief Ray Downey Courage and Valor Fund. Chief was an incredible person for the fire service and just an incredible man, and lost his life on 9/11. So when people go out and, you know, I know this is a shameless plug, but when they go out and they buy that speech, the only people that make money off it is not the author, not the speaker. It's the Downey Courage and Valor Fund. So just through that, things kind of started to grow. And we got to a point where we thought maybe we'd do a book and so on. And all that aside, the conversations, the emails, the phone calls, it's absolutely incredible. And that's what we were talking about with Bobby the other day and a couple other folks, and is just, you know, the emails of all the different things people are doing to make a difference. You know, we still have some firefighters that don't know where it all started. The officers that don't know where their, you know, the trumpets came, they call them bugles, and we'll get into that later. And chiefs that don't remember what we're all about. Hopefully, you know, in the very near future, I'm kind of hoping next show we can get, Professor Glennie on with us, and just hold on to your hats. If I can get Glenn on here, and we will. When it comes to the traditions and history of the fire service, just sit back, buckle up, and go for the ride, because we're going to have some fun. That guy's incredible. But we do. We've got a lot of young firefighters that we're still not telling them, you know, what's supposed to happen, how it's supposed to happen. We're not defining our expectations for them. We've kind of messed up a little bit a while back with our mission statements, and we actually found out where this kind of started over 20 years ago, and unfortunately, at a chiefs conference where they brought someone in to lecture and teach about mission statement writing, and, you know, this person came in and talked about the professional fire chief, and you've got to get rid of those uniforms, you got to wear a suit and tie, and, you know, describe what a power tie is, and if you want to be treated like maybe the police chief, then you got to act more professional and get all that stuff off the walls in the firehouse, and, you know, stop making it look like romper room. It's got to look professional. This is a business. And put the pictures of the landscapes and babbling brooks and creeks and the motivational posters up and all that stuff. And they took the firefighter out of the firefighter and the firehouse out of the firehouse. And now we're trying to fix that. A lot of great chiefs have come back to us. And when I mean back to us for real, and said, you know, we screwed up. You know, there is definitely a business side to what we do. But, you know, people want firefighters in those firehouses down at the end of the block. And there's nothing wrong with putting the stuff up on the walls, the pictures, and letting the guys have company logos and, you know, and letting them get out and work with the public, and not just the only time we get out is when the bell goes off or the pager. Till our next show, as I always end everything, please take care of each other for real and be safe.